Hello and welcome back to the True Blue LA podcast. Took a few weeks off. You know, winning a World Series is tiring on everybody, including podcasters.
Wait, the Dodgers won the World Series?
The Dodgers did win the World Series. Hey, we're recording not at 2 a.m. This is great.
This is our most lucid podcast in some time, to be honest.
What a time. There's a bit of news, and we'll kind of get caught up on that. Look ahead a little bit to the off season. You have a Dodgers rewind for us, don't you?
I do.
And then we've got questions from Craig. So yeah, we're gonna get back in the look of the thing. We only got the one celebratory episode. We got to get back to work now, and we'll do just that after this. And we have a bunch of news to come on for it, but it still feels weird. Like, is this? For me especially, right, because I have never gone into an off season with the Dodgers being World Series as far as I can remember. I know you have, but it was a while ago. It's certainly well before you were covering the Dodgers. Has it changed? Yeah. Unless you were writing for your little school newspaper or something.
I made a few fake newspapers back in the day, sure.
Does it feel different to you?
Yeah, well, and I'll say this. So my one previous experience of having the Dodgers win a World Series, well, like I was five in 1981 and didn't know anything about it. So like that, I'm not counting that, but 88, I was 12. And then they went into the offseason and acquired who at the time was my already declared favorite non-Dodgers player in Eddie Murray. So I was like, well, time for the dynasty. You know,
it's
like,
funny. The Dodgers also acquired my favorite non-Dodger in Yu Darvish and didn't work out as hot.
However, think about it this way. Like, given that the Cubs seem to be in a bit of a free fall, that like everyone might be available.
Hey.
He might be available. So, yeah, what a weird time. But yeah, like,
but I think the biggest thing, especially for us looking at this off season, so often we've gone back, what went wrong?
Right.
How do they fix it?
And yeah, how do they get over the hump? Like, what do they need to do? What how do they add to the bullpen, which inevitably failed? You know, like, nope. Like,
and especially if you look at like a lot of those last few games, obviously game four kind of looming differently, but like kind of everything went right.
That tends to happen
it's weird.
It's like the Giants, right? Like they had the pleasure. I don't know how to put this. Like they were wise to not make the playoffs in the odd years in between their three world championships because, like, that somehow like gets glossed over, right? Like obviously they won three titles in 5 years, so that's ridiculous. Like you give them all the credit in the world, but it's like also. Every like when you have a bullpen that has like a sub 2 ERA, like great, you know, like is that like something you count on, or did they like overperform to it? But it doesn't matter, those championships count. But like the Giants don't get like dinged for losing in the playoffs in 2011 or 2013 because they didn't make the playoffs, you know. It's like so the Dodgers like are always on that stage, so it's like their end of season is always broadcast to a wider audience, like which is what makes it harder. It's like, you know, even if you go back to like the Buffalo Bills, right? Like they're like historically seen as losers, even though they made four Super Bowls in a row. Like that's an accomplishment, and I think like so you have to like yeah, it's just odd.
Well, we can get right in the news, I guess. speaking of playoff, celebrating the playoff victories, Cody Bellinger getting shoulder surgery.
Yeah, and like again, this is it's hard to say it's exactly because of what happened after his game 7 home run, but this is more of a news item out of celebrating something good, you know, like as opposed to like, you know, Bellinger got hurt and that's why the Dodgers lost, you know, it's not like that or anything. So, you know, game seven of the NLCS, Bellinger hits home run, the go-ahead home run in the seventh. It gave the Dodgers their first lead of the series lead, that is, and their first lead of game seven. They won the pennant on that home run. During the celebration, he did a forearm bash with AJ Pollock, who was the on-deck hitter, and then got down the line to Kike Hernandez and went aggressive and then dislocated his shoulder because they did it so hard, and the trainers had to pop the shoulder, his right shoulder, back in for him to play the last two innings on defense. And he was relatively fine. Like, he actually homered in game one of the World Series, but he was only like 3 for 22 in the series. So,
noted to back problems, but could not play defense in game four. And how, you know,
because of pure speculation,
but you know, entirely possible related to, you know, feeling the shoulder discomfort. Point being, a healthy Cody Bellinger is better than a not one. So, do you have any idea how forced this surgery was? It kind of strikes me as one is like, it's a good time to do it. Like, the popping issues has been happening for a while. This wasn't the first time he's dislocated his shoulder, which in the playoffs was probably a good thing, because that actually meant the recovery time to at least be able to, even if, you know, wasn't spectacular, be able to play, especially in the defense, happened much quicker. But it seems like it's just like a good time to kind of get that cleaned up.
I think it first came up May of 2019, playing first base. I think it was on a dive. I'm not sure if it happened multiple times, but it was mostly with him playing first base. And that was one of the reasons they, like, for a while, they preferred him playing outfield, although he's played first since. It's not like they're that worried about it. But, like, I look back, we talked about it in episode 1910 of the podcast, if anyone wants to go back into the archives. So surgery, like, it seems like, the term used was to stabilize the shoulders, like to probably prevent.
He said, I want to keep doing this celebration, darn it, stabilize this.
Right. Right. And it's one of those things where it's a good surgery, like, for his health, but also you don't want to be like Mel Gibson in as many ways as possible. And his character in Lethal Weapon famously popped his shoulder out off and on. Actually, is he Riggs or Murtaugh in that? I think he's Riggs, right?
I don't know. Sure.
Okay. And so, like, anytime you can avoid being like Mel Gibson, I think that's a good thing. So, the recovery time is supposed to be 10 weeks, which puts him, he had the surgery Tuesday, we're recording Wednesday. That puts him at the very end of January to be, like, recovered, quote unquote. And so that's enough time to be ready for spring training. The Dodgers say he'll be, you know, ready to go in spring training. You always, like, err on the side of, caution, or just you add some time to whatever, like, a team or official says.
But they might have to do that for spring training anyways, so.
Exactly. So, but, like, even then, like, it seems like he should be ready to go. Jorge Castillo tweeted that Bellinger should be able to swing a bat in 4 weeks, which is, like, relatively normal in terms of, like, you know, he might have been doing some of that in December anyway, but, like, he's not, like, fully ramping up, I wouldn't think. So, like, he's kind of – it's roughly on schedule. He'll be limited, I'm sure, you know, just as opposed to, like, a normal offseason in terms of, like, I'm sure he can't, like, any sort of weight program he might have, that'll affect that. So that might be some sort of a lingering effect. You'd rather obviously have a healthy offseason, so it'll affect him. But it seems like he'll be ready to go at some level, you know, for the start of the season.
The other big news, came out of the World Series that we talked about. It was the first thing we did talk about to get it out of the way, was the Justin Turner COVID taking out. Then he's back with the team, taking pictures, having his mask off. Just horrible optics. Really, I think it did kind of dissipate just because I think the joy was so unbridled and so hard to refuse, kind of in the Twitter sphere. But that first 12 or 24 hours was really bummed out. And just in general, like, it's especially a player like Justin Turner, who has had a day named after him in this city and is considered a leader, to have him make kind of such a stupid move, kind of just let the air out. And there's sort of a resolution to it. I mean, it is a resolution, not much of one.
It seems like the resolution was MLB deciding that they were done with this and don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. Like that was sort of the thing.
That's in the playbook. All right.
And like, I forgot we actually recorded like before MLB released their initial statement on Turner.
It came out like almost literally when we were finished, I think.
No, because we recorded super late. They didn't have a statement till like the next day.
Okay, I think it was a report that kind of said what that statement said.
But yeah, it was like basically like, well, Turner's wrong. Like, you know, like he screwed up.
There was
up
a Forbes report, I think.
We're very disappointed in Turner, you know, that kind of a thing. And
it's all on him.
My thought at the time, because they're considering discipline. And my thought at the time, and it ended up being right, although not that I'm like bragging about it, because I think it was sort of pretty clear that given what MLB generally does, I think that was their that was the punishment, was like him sort of having to eat it for like a week or 2 weeks, and like it's like everyone kind of screwed up, right? Like in this thing, Turner should not have been on the field, like especially at the times he was with no mask, with others with no mask and all this. But MLB also should not have let him on the field.
Yep.
And so I'll just run down this. So I was on vacation last week. This happened right before I went on vacation. So like we're talking November 6th, I believe, was when this came out. So it's a little old even by now, but like whatever. So no punishment for Turner. MLB, there was like a series of statements. Turner had a lengthy apology. Stan Kasten had a statement as well. And then MLB had a statement. And MLB, not that they like fell on their sword, but they actually admitted some culpability in this. I'll just sort of get to how they, what their rationale was in Manfred's statement. No punishment. Now, MLB says several Dodgers encouraged Turner to leave the isolation room, which kind of fits with what they were sort of saying post-game, like he's our teammate, that kind of thing. You knew like they wanted him out there. And at the time, many on the team believed they were already exposed to Turner, which was also brought up post-game by Andrew Friedman and then in subsequent interviews by Dave Roberts, like thinking, look, we're already, you know, if we're going to get it, we're going to get it. Like that was their sort of mindset. Like, MLB says Turner was told incorrectly, quote, by an unidentified person, unquote, that other Dodgers players had tested positive. So he thought he was being singled out in isolation. So like there's that aspect as well. Turner said he got permission from a Dodgers employee to return to the field and that at least two Dodgers staffers did nothing to stop him once he was on the field. MLB says, and this is their sort of mea culpa, as light as it is, they should have had a security person monitor Turner in isolation, and they should have had someone to escort him from the stadium, which was like, you know, what should have happened, but they didn't. But
and like, it's this thing where, like, on one hand, especially compared to the first statement, it was almost as much culpability as I've seen MLB ever admit. On the other hand, it did nothing to say, oh, we screwed up the bubble. It said nothing to say we need to learn from this and maybe not let fans in. There's so much it didn't call to, and it's frustrating because I think Justin Turner should have been punished, but I also think the Dodgers and the Major League and Major League Baseball needed to have a punitive part of kind of restoring and admitting to what they did wrong. And no one's going to arbitrate the MLB, right? No, there's no one to send a punishment down the MLB unless they broke laws. And so that wasn't going to happen. But if they try to actually punish Turner, they probably get into a whole hoorah with the union where they say, you set him up to fail, so this is actually on you.
Yeah, and that's why MLB was like, yeah, we're done with it. You know, like,
It makes sense, but it's super frustrating because the fact that just because you can't punish one, like you could punish one person, you could try at least, but the fact that they're not willing to kind of punish themselves somehow means it just gets all swept under the rug. And that's just, it's a bummer because I feel like it deprives all of them of a chance of showing true repentance, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, and I don't know what would have been like appropriate, you know,
me
like
neither.
Punishment. it would have been like, what do? Like 5 games to start next season? Like that's probably in that range of what it would be, you know, something like that. But like, I don't even know. Now, the other thing that came out that I forgot to put in the notes, but I just remembered, like the same day or the couple days around that Turner resolution, was news that the LA County Department of Public Health says 5 members of the Dodgers tested positive. So like that news coming out concurrently with MLB sort of washing their hands, they're like, oh, he infected the team, you know. But like, but if you dig deeper, like the LA Times report on this says none of the positive tests were people inside the bubble. So it was like, you know, it was like literally like employees, not like the staff that were there in Texas necessarily, you know, in with the players. So like, it's not necessarily related, you know, but yeah, it was just like the timing of it. It's like everything about this, like that's probably another reason why MLB wanted it to like go away. Now, another thing about this too is like, I know Dave Roberts was interviewed like the week after the World Series. I was at a doctor's appointment and I happened to catch, it was a morning show, in one of the Fox station here. And, he mentioned, I was asked about Turner and he said, Roberts, since he came home, has tested positive by then, or tested negative, excuse me, twice.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, Robertson. Yeah. It was positive news, but a negative test, yeah. Right? But, and I think everyone that was in the bubble, once they were home, had to, like, isolate for 14 days. Given some of the Instagram posts, I'm not sure if everyone did that. But like, I don't know how long like the MLB level testing went, like if they followed up on it, because in a season, right, they'd be like contact tracing and figuring out, whereas I believe MLB was just like, yeah, we're done, our season's over, like, you know. So like that's sort of the very like wishy-washy, when you know what the true motivation was, is like, well, we got the season done, our money's like that check cleared, you know, like that's what we're worried about. And like, any more digging we're going to do is going to dig up something that's yeah, negative to the sport. So like, yeah, so it's a little bit unseemly, I would say,
especially but when like, it's greed and, yeah, selfish. It's selfishness that motivated Turner to go out there. It's greed that motivated all of the Major League Baseball screw ups along the way. Yeah. Just frustrating.
Yeah.
And but par for the course for MLB, sweep it up and hit home runs, watch balls go far.
That said too, like, we'll get to this in later in the episode, I know, but like I will say this, Turner, whenever they have fans in the stadium next year, Turner is going to get a huge ovation in his first game with fans at Dodger Stadium, because he's coming back, and we'll get to that later when we make free agent predictions. But I think he's going to still be a Dodger, even though he's a free agent right now.
Yeah, and there's always this weird, like, celebrating that, like, I get it, I guess, like over cheering for the person who got like kind of did something stupid or worse.
Yep.
I get it, but still, just a bummer. Hey, I want to talk about the roster. Let's do what the Major League Baseball did, huh? Do you want to know the truth?
This is me. I don't know if you can hear this. I'm washing my hands of it right now. Yeah. So Turner is one of 7 Dodgers who became free agents the day after the World Series. I know we've talked about this, where it's always whiplash, like going immediately from like the last out to like literally hours later. Hey, it's free agency. Like, you know, like. But it's weird. It's not that weird, because it's really only a technical thing. like it's NBA free agency is like once the clock starts, everything happens like right away.
I understand why it's not like that in the Major League Baseball, but boy, it would be fun.
It would be just like to have that flurry of moves, because that's always exciting. But there's MLB's just like, we'll get to it, you know, like
eventually, if the season starts, maybe not.
The other free agent for the Dodgers is Jimmy Nelson. He had a $2 million option for next year, was declined. He had back surgery. He didn't pitch this year, so they gave him a $500,000 buyout. And then Terrence Gore was outrighted to the minors. And as someone who's been outrighted before, he was actually outrighted in July even, and then re-added back. He had the option to elect for free agency, which he did. I'm not sure if he actually did it or he just became a minor league free agent because of his minor league service time. Either way, he's a free agent. So not on the 40-man anymore, not in the organization.
World Series superstar.
World Series champion, twice. World Series champion, yeah. So there's 32 players on the 40-man roster. A few will be added this Friday when rosters are set for the Rule 5 draft. Like, you know, we'll get some prospects added. We'll talk more about that next week once we know who the prospects are. The other thing I didn't put here, it's not necessarily roster related, although the roster that did win the World Series will be featured in the World Series celebration video.
Oh yeah.
And then that's and it's narrated by Vin Scully. So that's going to be out on December 8th. When I mentioned it on Twitter, I defaulted to mentioning DVD because I'm old, and like and people were just lucky that I didn't mention VHS, because that's how I have the last Dodger, although I do have the Dodger video on DVD now as well, mm-hmm. from 88. But that's going to be fun. It's DVD, Blu-ray. It'll be also
digital, you know,
digital as well.
I don't own a DVD player or a Blu-ray player. I guess my PlayStation 4 plays those things, but
I went like 8 years, I would say, without a DVD player. And I have one now. It was like, it's just a little cheapy one or whatever.
Needed to be able to watch Major League on demand.
Yeah. So no, the thing is like, you don't realize I do still have a, storage bin little thing in my apartment of VHS tapes, including like UHF, NBA Awesome Endings, several like comedies, like Caddyshack, I believe, is in there, UHF, of course, and then like several sports videos. It seems cost prohibitive to get those transferred to DVD or digitally or something, but maybe I should do that at some point.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Probably on the 8th when it comes out, I will be downloading it from some sort of store in high def and just watching.
I will be as well. I think I'm going to be able to see at least a reasonably advanced copy. Maybe it's the week before.
Wow.
But, so I will be reviewing it, I think. So I'm looking forward
big
to
shot.
That. You're absolutely right.
Before we move on to a commercial break and then talking about all the awards that have come out, a few note-keeping questions that I saw. I did not go on vacation, but I definitely kind of tuned out some of the more procedural stuff that normally I would be hanging on to because I'm really thinking about next season. Yep. With COVID, is there are winter meetings on Zoom? What are they doing?
So I don't remember
just set up a Slack with all the GMs.
I don't remember how they said this. Like I think the winter meetings were like canceled, but like I don't know if I think that just means like the event itself, because the winter meetings are like a huge organization, especially on the minor league side, in terms of like it's like the annual meetings are there. I think a number of the normal things that happen will be done via Zoom. Like you're going to have the Veterans Committee Hall of Fame inductees. I believe the All MLB team will be announced that week. There's going to be like, I'm sure like, well, the thing is like the minor leagues are like not finalized yet, because there's all, they're going through like changes this offseason, so that's weird too. But I think any sort of like regular like league wide meetings, I think it's all going to be done via Zoom.
Okay.
But in terms of like, you know, reporters being there, meeting with teams and things like that, that's not going to happen. And I don't know what like level of access there's going to be to that type of a type of stuff. And I don't know if that's going to, you know, that's also sort of when some trades happen, but I don't know if there's going to be a way to facilitate those type of things now, other than just normal texting and phone calls.
And Rule 5 draft will just happen offline or on a phone call or whatever.
That'll be, I'm sure that'll be like a Zoom thing as well. But that's right in that week too, like that December 9th-ish or whatever. I think I forgot the exact date.
Do we have a timeline on them settling on what, if any, sort of CBA modifications they'll need to make due to COVID, specifically thinking on free agent signings and stuff like that, the DH rule and National League?
So they usually have like the GM and owners meetings, which they didn't have, but I think they might be like, they're probably still like going back and forth on that. I don't know what the timeline is on it, because honestly, like, if you're talking about, there's a big difference in terms of like how they don't know, like, you know, there's these vaccines that could be months away. So like whether that affects play or not, like, I don't know.
I wonder if they care at all that teams knowing whether or not they have a designated hitter.
Yeah. That's probably something they need to like figure out relatively soon, right? To like just to have teams know. I think we've talked about this before. I think I think DH is generally wanted, but I think depends on which side, but I think each side is probably going to want to get something for having the DH. You know, for agreeing to it. Yeah. So like, it's like
you both want it. Just give it up.
so maybe they have to figure that part out. But like, if it's like a health issue, that would be if they have to shorten spring training because of COVID. And we probably wouldn't know that till January or February. Because then the pitchers can't ramp up. So they're, you know, just let's not let them hit, you know, like maybe it's that, but I doubt it's that necessarily. So
before we get to awards, give me a Patton, Eric Steven percentage on the National League will have a DH next year.
I will say 42.7.
Oh, I'm much higher than that. I think it's essentially a given.
Yeah, I'm as you can tell, I'm wavering.
Yeah, we'll see. So maybe they'll turn into an actual bet a few weeks down the line. All right. Before we take a break, let's quickly go through award seasons.
Sure.
The other big thing of sort of the runner-up prize usually for all these Dodger playoff losses is like, well, somebody's going to win a big award. Didn't really happen this year. Some smaller ones did, I know, but we got the big one, and that's what matters.
Yeah, so Mookie Betts, world champ, twice world champion, former MVP, finished second in MVP voting to Freddie Freeman. Mookie Betts did win a Silver Slugger and a Gold Glove. He was the only Dodger to win each of those. Now, Cody Bellinger had a case in center field, but he started like two-thirds of the games as Trent Grisham did in center, and the defensive numbers sort of reflected that. And this year, there was no coaches' vote. It was only stats, and so that's essentially why Bellinger lost. I think if he had a full season in center field, he might have won, or at least it would have been closer. But that Fielding Bible Award, not as prestigious, but still an honor. Betts won in right field for that, and for all of baseball. Kiki Hernandez won as a multi-position player. He similarly was hurt at second base, even though he led the majors in defensive runs saved, which is one of the stat components that Sabre uses in the Gold Glove voting. He didn't play enough at second base to like accumulate the other stats. So he got hurt in that regard. Tony Gonsolin, I believe, man, I forget which war he led NL rookies in, but he finished fourth in rookie of the year voting, but he did get a first place vote. Devin Williams won the award. Dustin May finished fifth. Dave Roberts was fifth in manager of the year. He also got a first place vote. Old friend Don Mattingly won for the first time because he had like 87 million players on the Marlins test positive for COVID, and they still made the playoffs in the expanded playoffs. But the other thing, Clayton Kershaw, ninth in Cy Young Award. He got 2 fifth place votes. Trevor Bauer won it. Andrew Friedman did win MLB Executive of the Year, which is a relatively new award. It's one that's voted on by all 30 clubs. It's the third year of the award. Now, the normal Executive of the Year that's been around forever since 1936 is the Sporting News Executive of the Year Award. So I have a trivia question for you. The Sporting News Award this year went to Rick Hahn. Friedman finished third. Now, that award is also based on a survey of major league executives. But for the Sporting News Award, like it just depends who answers them, right? Like, so only there were only 18 votes this year. Rick Hahn got 6. I believe Friedman got 3. He was tied for third. So my question to you is, who was the last Dodger to win Sporting News Executive of the Year?
All right. That's going to be fun. I will figure out what I know after this. Who was the last Dodgers executive to win the Sporting News Award for Executive of the Year?
Huh?
A lot of... So I'm going to allow myself 2 or 3 guesses. I've attempted to play clock game with this. But there's this gap that I know where I'm like, I don't know who the sort of main executive of the Dodgers was in certain decades. So let's start really early. Let's say for whatever reason, Brian Cashman and Billy Beane were winning all of this during some of the years, and say Branch Rickey.
Okay, so Branch Rickey is the second Dodger to win. There's been 5 now. Branch Rickey won in 1947. With the Dodgers, the year he signed Jackie Robinson, like not a bad year. That was his third Sporting News Executive of the Year. He also won the first award in 1936 and in 1942, both with the Cardinals. He basically invented the farm system. when you like do a major like rule change, you're in.
But enough Dodgers have won since then.
I'm sorry?
And more. You said like 5 others had won, Dodgers have won since then?
No, 5 total. So 3 have won since Rickey.
Okay. Okay, so we're going for most recent. I'll go back to my other era of knowledge. Dan Evans?
No, like he didn't. Well, like the Dodgers didn't make, they didn't make the playoffs with him.
So,
not that matters, but like, yeah, but, we'll get to Dan Evans in a little bit in a later segment, but, no, he did not win. He was
all right.
From
and my last guess, Paul DiPodesta.
No, God. No, they won in his first year. They won
was
the
year I was thinking like, oh, it's the new face, made some trades.
The team they lost to in the playoffs had Walt Jocketty as their GM and he won the Cardinals. So
tapping out.
Okay, so the last one to win it was, if you just go back to the last time the Dodgers won the World Series, even though the vote is done before the playoffs, Fred Clair, 1988. Okay. So the other Dodgers to win it, in addition to Branch Rickey, the first one to do it was Larry McPhail in 1939, which it's a PH with McPhail, but like this from a sounding standpoint, that's not a name you want to have if you want to get made fun of, like. If you lose, you just, oh, look at McPhail over there, you know, like, I don't know. But the other one, Walter O'Malley, who was the owner.
You know what's really funny is I almost thought, I'm like, I know he was the owner, but like, and that's what
he won in 1955. Buzzy Babasi, who was the GM, won in 1959. Mm. And then that's it for the Dodgers. So, yeah, fun, long-standing award.
All right. I'm excited for a Dodgers rewind that this show has a a little connection to.
Yep. Kim Ng is the Dodgers Rewind today because she was just hired as the Marlins general manager.
Didn't think I could ever kind of like the Marlins, but here we are. More than yep. that. Kudos, like, how awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, for sure, like, completely long overdue, but also, like...
I think I was expecting the Dodgers to hire her twice. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just thought that was, she was, like, the heir apparent, like...
So Ng has been in baseball 30 years, right? 30 years. Like, that's crazy. First female GM in, like, any of the four major North American men's sports. She's the second GM of Asian descent, Farhan Zaidi being the first. If you look at this, right, like, so she started with the White Sox under Dan Evans, I might add, who we just talked about. Was later hired by Dan Evans with the Dodgers. But in between, she went to the Yankees. She was assistant general manager under Brian Cashman at age 29 in 1998. They won three World Series and a pennant, four pennants in her 4 years with the Yankees. Any man who had that resume would have been immediately hired as GM, yep. right? Like, and so the fact that she didn't, like, obviously that's sort of the industry we're in that it's very slow to change. So she was with the Dodgers from 2002 to 2011, vice president, assistant GM, first under Dan Evans, then Paul DePodesta, then Ned Colletti. She interviewed for the vacant GM job after DePodesta was fired in late 2005. That job eventually went to Colletti, and she stayed. She talked about this in her introductory press conference on Monday. I'm just going to quote from Kim Ng here. I keep saying it. It's pronounced Ng. I'm not sure I'm saying it right, so I apologize. But this is what she said Monday. When I got to L.A. and got more knowledge and learning under my belt is when I felt like maybe this was a possibility, this being eventually being a GM. I was put into some situations that were not in my comfort zone. I was farm director for a year, then took on more responsibility with pro scouting, and that's where I got my sea legs under me. So I think our first encounter with her was a Dodger Thoughts night. I don't remember if it was 05 or 06. Maybe it was around then.
Yeah.
But she spoke to a group of Dodger fans at the time, and while that night might be most remembered for us, me losing it during you comparing Tommy Lasorda to Abe Simpson, Kimming was incredibly impressive. The thing that stood out to me that night was, I don't remember who asked the question. It was like, what's your favorite pitch? And it was like, thinking about, is she going to say curveball or changeup or something? And she said strike one. And then she proceeded to talk for like 5 minutes on the importance of getting ahead in the count, how important, and like just the reasons behind it. It was so good. Like,
so, and it has stuck with me literally ever since, in that, like, yeah. I am so, and this, it comes up all the time, and it's such a more popular, you know, not that, you know, she invented this idea or anything like that, but it's so much more popular on that, even national broadcasts, came up in the World Series a lot with John Smoltz. But now when they, like, pitchers aren't attacking and not getting strike one, I think back to that and just go, oh no, it's so important.
Yeah. Dan Evans, again, who hired Ng with the White Sox and with the Dodgers, Ken Rosenthal talked to him the other day, and he had a story, a quote from Evans here talking to Rosenthal. She was really good at doing arbitration and preparation. We reached a point in 1995, this is with the White Sox, when I needed her to get into a bigger role. I told her, I think you should be the person to present the arbitration case, and I'll do the rebuttal instead of me doing the whole thing. She looked at me and said, I'm ready for that. Let's go. I said, there's a lot of pressure being this person. And she said, I'm in. And like that, that's sort of what, you know, strikes you about Ng. She's like fearless, right? Like, she's obviously put up with a lot of rejection in terms of not getting the GM job previously in her various interviews. But in terms of arbitration, that was among her duties with the Dodgers. And you know, as is the case in most salary arbitration things, the team and player will end up reaching some sort of agreement instead before it gets to an actual hearing. But the two hearings she did have with the Dodgers, Kim Ng won, most famously with Eric Gagne in 2004, right after his like crazy Cy Young season when he had 1.20 ERA, 55 saves, no blown saves except for the All-Star game. And he wanted $8 million in his first year of arbitration. The Dodgers said that's too much too soon. We're offering $5 million, and then she won. So, and then the next year, instead of going to arbitration, Gagne signed a multi-year deal. Same with Joe Bimel in 2007, obviously smaller scale. Bimel lost his arb case, had arbitration the next year, but again, came to an agreement beforehand. He's like, you know what, not going through that again. So, like, I think, I don't know, it's one of the, again, long overdue. A few people said this was an out-of-the-box hire by the Marlins. I don't agree. Like, it's, if anything, she's so qualified. Like, it's...
No, overdue is the right word. Like, she's, and I think there you have a trivia question for me. Name has come up a lot in GM positions, and those are the only ones we know about. For instance, we didn't know about her interviewing with the Marlins, right, until she was hired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. Some of this, so much of this is under the radar. Now, I'll say this, like, while it's overdue, it's still wonderful and should be celebrated.
Absolutely.
And also, it's also just the start. It's great that you can never say again that there hasn't been a woman hired to be GM. But to make that happen in the future, you have to make sure that women have opportunities at like all levels. So like, you know, it's easier to get a GM job if you've been an assistant GM for a while. So let's get more women in those roles. And how do you get to those roles? Well, maybe it's lower down the scale. So you have to like be more mindful in hiring women at various levels. So like, that's how they get opportunities going forward. And I think, I mean, Ang is a perfect example of like, she's so good. Like there's nobody that's like not impressed by her. Now, obviously many should have hired her like in the past. Molly Knight, in her article, on The Athletic about this, she said, Frank McCourt wanted to hire Kim Ng, as Dodgers GM, because he wanted to get the credit for being the person to hire the first Dodgers. But he also, the reason he didn't do it is the most Frank McCourt reason ever, is because he didn't want to be the guy who fired the first female GM. So like, what a coward, like that guy forever. So the other thing from Kim Ng, I listened to her press conference on Monday. You know, again, very impressive, but this really stood out to me. So the last like 10 years or so, I guess 9 years, she's been working in the commissioner's office, you know, various roles, working under Joe Torre for part of that, working with various youth programs, RBI, that kind of stuff. She was asked about like what she sees in like young girls. And this was her quote. They inspired me day to day, because they just don't see limits. They don't. They're too young. They're too naive. The world is their oyster. And so like, I like the fact that we've eliminated now, you know, you can't hire a female GM because we just don't know. Well, she's earned the right to like, to fail, right? She's earned the right to be mediocre, just like any man has at her job. I don't think she'll be mediocre. But like, it's great that we have a female general manager now. Should have happened before, but it's great that we have it now. And I just hope that it's like, you know, it means things for the future. We'll see. Now, that said, I have a trivia question for you related to Kim Ng. Uh-huh. How many known teams have interviewed Kim Ng to be their general manager, and can you name them? The hint is you should know two of them.
All right. My number is 8.
Okay. So the actual number is 7. So you are very close. Okay. I'm going off. Wikipedia had this, as well as Molly Knight's article. Molly Knight had the other team that was not mentioned, but from Molly's article, Dodgers, Mariners, Giants, Angels, and Padres, which was also on Wikipedia.
Oh, you didn't let me finish. I was going to guess.
Oh, sorry.
Nope, too late crap. Now.
I'm sorry. I forgot that was part of the question.
So my list real quick was in rough order of confidence, LA, Florida, Padres, Seattle, Arizona, and then I was starting to really just guess.
So you had, yeah. So, all right. So you had four of them. That's good.
And a West then
band. the other team that Molly had was the Orioles. She was on the Athletic Daily podcast this week, and she mentioned, I think when her initial story went up, she didn't list the Orioles, but she got a text from someone with the Orioles that said, oh, yeah, we interviewed her too. So she added it to the, so it's like one of those things, like there might have been more, right? Like it's, some of these things don't always get out. So yeah, that's Kim Ang. Good for her. Glad, very glad to do it.
And now it's time for
Questions from Craig. We love them.
Ah, questions from Craig. We didn't get to do it, would you believe, at our 2 a.m. episode. But we're back, and it's time to crank them out. Five mostly quick questions. This first one might take a bit.
This is a doozy.
Oh boy. Oh no, I forgot to do any research on this. Let's play the free agent game for Eric and Jacob for the contract tracker. Oh no. Name the team, contract length, and amount for the Dodger free agents. So on amount, are we going to do like Price is Right rules? Like
no,
closest, just roughly closest to AAV, okay. Or what are we going to do here?
He did put amount. Okay. I was like looking at it, I didn't see a amount.
Yeah, that's what it. I totally forgot to do my research on that.
I think it's total guarantee, and it's I think we could do
total guarantee.
We could
do
it doesn't have to be Price is Right, but it's just closest to
okay
under beats over in a tie.
And maybe we'll have Craig on and he can arbitrate who wins. You know,
sure.
Because like, what's like who wins if it's like, you know, a 2-year contract of a player option and one of us had two and one of us had three, you know, stuff like that. Maybe Craig can arbitrate this. All right. Justin Turner. No way he's not a Dodger, right?
Yeah. Do you want to pick first and then I'll pick after, or do you want
sure,
me to go first?
Sure. We'll, that works. I'll get the odd numbers. I'll go first on the odd numbers. How about that?
Okay. All right.
Dodgers, my numbers are going to be so bad. So 222.
Okay. So I had a number in my head. Turner's the only one I really have a number for, like in my head. But I do think he'll be a Dodger, and I think he's 226.
Okay. I was in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And that might be right. Like I almost said 224. Like
it could be lower. Like this offseason, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like
Right. And the whole COVID suppression leverage, you know, quote unquote revenue is down. I mean revenue is down, but how much? It's going to be weird. I think especially maybe for position players who just have had their market really suppressed lately. Kike Hernandez.
So I'm going on this now?
Yep.
So I saw, I don't know if it was in our comment section. I didn't open the MLB trade rumors like prediction.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do before we recorded.
I just want to like wing it because that's the best sort of way to do it. In my head thought maybe Giants, but like, so the reason I don't think that is like they sort of have Kike Light in Mauricio Dubon. And, like, you know, not that they're entrenched, but, like, Donovan Solano at second. Brandon Crawford at short, although just for one more year. So, like, is he really going to play that much there? So, weirdly off the board. Man, I don't even know if this makes any sense, but the first team that came to me was the Mariners.
Okay.
And like, this is dumb, but I'm going to say 1 year, $8 million.
I think he gets more than 1 year. Unless he does this like weird, it's COVID, I'm going to do a prove it contract somewhere where market, I could start.
This is a market thing for me. Like, that's all. I mean, like, I don't think it's necessarily, it's anti-Kike. in this. It's just more like, I think this market is screwed.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And he's especially hard because it's hard to go off need. You assume it would be a team that needs a second baseman, but maybe not.
It honestly wouldn't surprise me if the Dodgers brought him back. Like, you know, like
all of these, most of these names, it wouldn't surprise me if the Dodgers, because they're going to be hunting for value, and this year is going to present a lot of possible value propositions. And why not bring back the guys that that we already know they like because they're on the team already? Why not just kind of try to run it back if the value contracts present themselves? I think Kike is maybe the most likely, just given his age and his flexibility and the fact that his role as the Dodgers is kind of determined, and maybe he's going to be able to find more somewhere else. I am going to say 330.
Oh, God. All right.
So
I'll be winning this one.
Oh, wow. Okay. the Rangers.
All right. So Jock Peterson is next. You get to go first.
He's going to be a Giant for...
From Palo Alto.
He's going to do a prove-it contract at the Giants. 1 year. $9 million.
All right. I also have Jock on a 1 year deal at $7 million with the Angels. He's going to
complete the trade. He's screwed up. God, this year's so hard. Blake trying it.
All right. I'm going first. He didn't strike out a ton, but they generally liked him. I think he comes back to the Dodgers on a 1 year, $9 million deal.
Are we just assuming everyone's doing these prove it contracts? This is funny.
I'll tell you, I'm doing 1 year deals for everybody. I don't think anyone's getting a multi-year deal.
2 years. I'm going to just wing it here. 2 years, $16 million with incentives for the Rockies.
Nice. Okay, you're up first with Alex Wood.
Oh no.1 year with the Braves, $3 million in incentives.
What did you say for Wood? I lost you.
1 year, 3 years with incentives with the Braves.
1 year, $3 million, Braves. Okay. I think he also goes back, but to the Reds, who lose Trevor Bauer. So I think he goes...
basically swap.
I think he goes 1-4.
Okay.
No, he'll get 5, 1-5.
Okay. Pedro Baez.
Okay, let's see how. He's going to go the rich man's Yimi Garcia route, and follow his path to Miami and Don Mattingly. So he'll get a 1 year, $4 million deal with the Marlins.
1 year, $5 million with, I don't know, Houston.
All right. Jake McGee is you?
No, not Colorado. probably bad memories there. He 1 year with the Dodgers, $2 million.
Man, okay, so I kind of like Victor Gonzalez came on. They're not going to have Caleb Ferguson. I think he does come back to the Dodgers, but 1 year, $4 million.
Okay. Oh,
man. What a dark.
We're a little not bullish. Prove us wrong, front offices. Prove us wrong. could you read the second question?
Sure.
As I pull it up.
So Walker Buehler. At age 26, has 83 strikeouts, over 12 strikeouts per nine in his postseason career.
Okay, that makes more sense. Go ahead, sorry.
Clayton Kershaw at this point had 58 career strikeouts. in his postseason career. Do you think Buehler could eventually surpass his teammate in this category?
When I read this question, I missed the word postseason, and I'm just like, well, there's a typo somewhere. I think they each had more than this.
Look, this was a short season, but let's look at it.
I mean, he could.
So Kershaw's
at Kershaw's pitched a lot in the playoffs.
So yeah, Kershaw's at 207, right? So Buehler's made 11 starts. Kershaw's at 30. So like that's a lot, right?
A lot.
So not only does he have to imagine like passing him if Kershaw doesn't pitch in the postseason again, but guess what? Kershaw's going to pitch in the postseason again. So I'm going to say no, because I think Kershaw adds a lot to it. And not, you know, Buehler will still be great and could have a very high total, but it's going to be hard for him to actually pass Kershaw.
And Clayton, you know, had to pitch a lot twice in a series. And if the Dodgers just sweeping the rest of the way, not the chance to do that.
Yep.
I don't think anyone ever focuses on a manager's Hall of Fame potential, but besides putting in probably 10 to 12 more successful years, what do you think of Dave Roberts' chances?
You can't say anything now. Like, it's only 5 years, right? Like, he's had a great 5 years.
What would it take for a manager to, like,
lock it up?
To, like, Koufax this, right? Where you're just like, if he manages 5 more years and gets 2 World Series, is that it? Does that
well,
do
I
it?
Believe, I gotta look. I has think,
a, yeah, has every, a manager ever won 3 and not eventually made the Hall of Fame?
Everyone with 3 is in the Hall of Fame, I think, except Bruce Bochy, who hasn't.
Who will.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, like.
Because Bochy is a pretty good example, like long career, but honestly, not the crazy most successful career, but he did win 3 World Series.
Yeah,
and I think it's essentially a given he's going to go, right? I feel like that's a narrative.
He's a lock.
Yeah, exactly.
He's an absolute lock. So the there's like 2 is almost a lock, right? Like, so there's Bill Kerrigan, who won 2 World Series, only managed for 7 years, though. That's why he's not in the Hall. Terry Francona will eventually be in the Hall, currently active, which is why he's not. Cito Gaston only managed 12 years. So, like, there's a comp if you want. I don't think he – so, in other words, Roberts, like, needs to get to 3, I think.
Has a manager – how many managers – and I already can think of one who only won 1 World Series eventually did make it in.
Like what's quite a few.
Okay.
Like, let's see. Oh, a lot actually. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18.
Just the way Dave's talked about it, it doesn't seem like he views this as a thing he's going to do until his absolute last days. Like, he's talked about wanting to retire at some point, like not soon, mind you, just like, there will be a time when he's done, I think, is how he's kind of presented it. So I'm assuming he doesn't put in the longevity case for where this one World Series does it. So I think if he wins 2 and is a manager for 5 more years, he's got it. And if he wins 3 at any point, doesn't even, if he wins the next 2 and he retires, he's got it.
Yeah. So I was wrong. A lot of these Hall of Famers were Hall of Fame players. But I think... I think we're up to, it's like 5 or 6.
Is it Earl Weaver one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Five or six one championship managers that are in the Hall of Fame, I think. I didn't look at the whole list, but like, I think that's right.
So yeah, that's my answer. If he wins 2 more, he's in almost no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And if he wins 1 plus 5 more successful-ish years. You could even maybe say if he wins another one, it's just in, assuming he doesn't retire right after.
I think you have to have the book. Like, he's going to have to manage, like, all, you know, you have to manage, like, 15 to 20 years. I think,
see, that's going to be really interesting. Like, 10 years at 3, I think, absolutely does it. And I'm curious to see if 2 years at 2, like, 2 years at two, well, but then assuming he, you know, what if the Dodgers win 10 divisions in a row?
10 years at two, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
So that's part of it, but like again, Cito Gaston, 12 years to, obviously not, not the same sustained success, but also a different era.
Yeah, and that's where, like, because I'm not just saying, like, bringing back Bruce Bochy, if you just chop off Bruce Bochy, like he like ended up at like a 500 manager, if Dave Roberts keeps doing what he's doing for five more years, say he literally just duplicates and it's six pennants and two World Series rings and a 10 in a row division titles, I don't think you need 15 years for that to be a Hall of Fame career.
So the number on, oh wait, this is interesting, the auto number for pennant winners seems to be four. Now, Charles Comiskey, I believe, is in as an owner or a contributor, but everyone else on here, I believe, is Hall of Fame for men, except Frank Chance. But like, yeah, pretty much it's Bruce Bochy and all Hall of Famers who are four pennants, regardless of World Series one.
I'm thinking of it like a very casual interview I think he did with Alana where he mentioned like wanting to retire into San Diego with his wife or something like that. And again, he wasn't committed to anything, but it struck me as someone who might only manage 10-ish years, as opposed to like just trying to make this, you know, a Tony La Russa lifestyle. Another man in the news. So he may be a really interesting case for the Hall if that actually comes to fruition, and it'll be fun to see sort of the articles written about that if that's the case. And he, you know what, he could change his mind and manage infinite more years, and more power to him.
Yep.
Fourth question. Opening day 2022. Another question I misread when I first read
it.
Will Clayton Kershaw, Justin Turner, Kenley Jansen be in Dodger uniform? Read this as 2021. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking like we just said Turner's gonna be back. Come on now, like,
Clayton. What is Clayton? Yeah. What do you know, Craig?
I completely misread that as well.
No.
So I think no. I think Kershaw and Turner will.
Yeah.
But Kenley probably goes as a free agent. No, that things could change.
Absolutely. But maybe he goes to Driveline and does what Kershaw did. Maybe he finds new success at like
he already went to Driveline though.
More Driveline.
Yeah. It could be an annual trip.
Maybe they find a way to like keep him rested to actually make him an effective, whether it's setup, whatever. Things can change, but I would guess no. Yep. Thanksgiving is coming up. So what is your favorite way to eat leftover turkey? He's provided some options: a regular sandwich, hot turkey sandwich with gravy, some combination with leftover mashed potatoes, stuffing, cranberries, super stew, none, get me some ham.
So I guess it depends. Like, so the last 5 years or so, maybe 5 to 10, my Thanksgiving, like a lot of times I would go to my sister's before and like be there for like a few days. So like, that's a lot easier when it's all enclosed in one spot. So you have all the leftovers at the ready. Now I usually go somewhere for the day and probably leave that day, maybe Friday morning. If I'm taking something home, it's usually like just turkey. So in that sense, like a sandwich is by far the easiest, and it's probably my favorite. I do enjoy a reheated leftover plate with like a little bit of mashed potatoes, a little bit of stuffing, and that's kind of it. The gravy is always a tough sell for me after Thanksgiving. Yeah. Like, it's okay to reheat, but it's not the best.
No.
So like I shy away from it. But just reheated leftover plate is always good. But I think I just like doing it could just be a roll, like a dinner roll with a little bit of turkey, maybe some mustard, and that's kind of it. Like, that's my go-to, I think, on all this.
Yeah, I'd say I'm an even split, same thing, combo plates. Using stuffing in the waffle iron, very delicious, by the way, good way to capture a lot of the deliciousness.
Nice.
On the combo plates. And just real quick to comment, ham is a Christmas food. for me.
I don't mind it being just general lazy holiday food, and not lazy because I mean you're whatever, but it's just a nice, it's a comfort food, and yep, it's okay. Like that's a good weekend for it. So I actually was thinking about getting a ham for the weekend, but I think I'm gonna end up. Yeah, I think I might end up making a roast instead. Mm. So we'll see how that goes.
We are getting a smoked turkey from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Yeah.
Nice. It's
the best barbecue in Kansas City, I think.
That sounds excellent.
Others differ. So.
All right.
Well, we'll be like, we have anything. We're going to do this live. When are we going to record again?
I think we should go. Oh, I was thinking we probably shouldn't do next week because it's Thanksgiving. I just thought of that now. So if we go 2 weeks from now, we can capture both the 40 man additions plus the non-tenders. The non-tender deadline's December 2nd. So we'll come to you at some time just after the non-tender deadline. And until then, hope you have a good Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you later.